With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome in to the Lions 24/7 podcast. Tyler Donahue, Sean Fitz with you as always. And it's been a busy week in Happy Valley. A lot to discuss here. Last week, right before we recorded, got news of Sean Spencer departing the program. Longtime veteran of this staff, leaving a void at the defensive line coaching position. We've got an update for you. What we're hearing as they look to fill that vacancy in the coming days. Get to that later on. We also had a chance to be introduced to the three newest coaching staff hires, all on the offensive side of the football, during a Wednesday press conference. That was Kirk Shiraka, the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator, Phil Troutwine, the offensive line coach, and Taylor Stubblefield, the wide receivers coach. Some takeaways, some audio from there. But first, we start with the NCAA transfer portal. News surfaced early in the week about a reserve member of Penn State's roster, DJ Brown, a backup defensive back, a redshirt junior, to be entering the portal, but certainly overshadowed, as we learned just as we were walking out of Penn State facilities on Wednesday. Ricky Slade, the former five-star composite prospect, the starter at running back for the first two Penn State games of the 2019 season, has entered the portal. He's exploring his other options. Something, as we'll get to, not surprising considering the circumstance, but maybe a bit surprising considering the tone of kind of how he was discussing his future at Penn State not too long ago. And Sean, this is the way of the world. That announcement, the breaking news of him going in the portal, is just hours after Justin Shorter signs officially with the Florida Gators, two marquee members of that 2018 recruiting class, and another reminder of how quickly things can move in this college football landscape.
And how quickly those stars go away when they get onto campus. I mean, this is really, as you mentioned it, not really a surprise. And when you think about the fanfare that Ricky Slade came in with, and that's all well in the past now. It's one of those things that happens with college football. And, you know, you look at two different situations here. Justin obviously, you know, had a lot in front of him in terms of opportunity. You know, you asked James Franklin yesterday about the wide receivers, and he mentioned, you know, he admitted clearly that there's a hole out there that they need to address. And, you know, Justin Shorter would have fit nicely in there. On the flip side, you got Ricky Slade, a guy that's really just, you know, been passed up, and that is what it is. And you can't really blame him for wanting to look elsewhere. It's a four-back rotation. You knew there was going to be some sort of attrition. You weren't completely sure, but it made the most sense for Ricky Slade to go elsewhere. A fresh start is one of the things that can help him. I think he's a very talented player. I think that probably it was going to be very tough. I mean, once you've been passed up, it's one thing to be low on the totem pole and, you know, a guy is above you, say, you know, be like a Devin Ford versus a Journey Brown right now, where that guy's always above you. But when you go from the top of that, you know, suddenly to the bottom, that's a big difference. So wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, ended up maybe taking a look at Old Dominion or something like that. I think it'd be a great fit for Ricky Slade down there. But I think there's going to be plenty of interest. You know, this is one of those things that, you know, we talk about the stars sometimes. And by the way, Ricky Slade, the only prospect I've ever seen to beat the math, because he was a four-star in 24/7, a four-star on ESPN, a four-star in Rivals, but a composite five-star somehow. We talked about that when he signed. It was crazy. But, you know, there's going to be plenty of interest just based on his high school resume and the potential that he once showed. But, yeah, that's how quickly things move these days. I mean, this is the end of his true sophomore year. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to be, you know, either sitting out a year or finding a different spot where he can play right away. And it really doesn't change much for Penn State, because they've got so many guys, so many guys, horses in the stable, if you want to go on the cliche route. But you've got Journey Brown there. We saw what Noah Kane can do. You saw glimpses of what Devin Ford can do. And as we've mentioned, you're very high on Noah Kane. I'm very high on Devin Ford. I think the tremendous talents for both of them. And then you add Keziah Holmes to the mix in January, and all of a sudden, you know, that's a lot of backs, man. That's a lot of backs. Not many carries, just one football to go around.
Ricky Slade had a bunch of offers by the end of his first year of high school. He was a record-setting player down there at C.D.A. Hilton High School during his prep career. Ended up with 30-plus options at the college level. It was a big win for Penn State to get him on board. He ended up being the 2017 Gatorade Player of the Year in Virginia. Just didn't quite materialize, although it seemed to be on the right track. Entering the 2019 season, he was the understudy to Miles Sanders in 2018. 6 touchdowns in that role. He averaged almost 6 yards per carry, but we saw very early on here in 2019 that it wasn't going to be a bell cow running back situation like it was with Sanders, and before that with Barkley, it was going to be the ball getting spread around. Guys were going to have a chance to step up, fall behind, and in Ricky's case, he fell behind a bit. And I think, you know, one thing that we'll get to in a moment with Jaywan Sider is there was a bit of a resurgence for Ricky because things got really rough for him, and you had a lot of fans, you know, basically wondering if he was going to enter the transfer portal during the season, and like Justin Shorter ultimately did, but he came through, you know, a little bit of a rebound late in the season, and just some thoughts on him. I had a chance to speak with him in the locker room down at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, and you know, 6 weeks ago at this point, and there, you know, he kind of talked about walking across the coals. He called it a roller coaster, and here are his words about the whole 2019 experience.
You know, it was a roller coaster. It was the first time I've had to face any type of adversity like this. I feel like it helped me grow as a football player, as a man. You know, I don't look at it as a negative. I kind of look at it as a positive. You know, sit back, you know, really get to appreciate the game. You know, how fast it can really just be taken away from you, whether it's injuries or not. And just, you know, sit back, keep my head down, and work on the things that I need to work on.
And quickly, our conversation there turned to the future, and I said, well, you know, now that you've experienced this, Kazai Holmes, Kevon Lee, these guys are highly coveted recruits that are now adding to the mix, and Slade said, yeah, we're going to show them how we do things, we're going to embrace this competitive nature and move forward and carry it forward. But again, this is a guy now 2 years of college eligibility left. When you get the kind of attention from the Power 5 level at the young age that Ricky got, him, his family certainly have aspirations to continue his football career beyond the college level. I think he's a guy who can provide some dynamic things for you as a receiver. Still waiting to see him really show that he can be a consistent rusher, especially between the tackles. But, you know, this makes sense for him from a personal standpoint. And like you said, it's not like he's really sticking it to Penn State. He's leaving a backfield in a very good situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of those ones that makes sense, and it's an unfortunate reality of college football these days. And I don't know that the portal changes all that much with a situation like Ricky Slade, where he's got, you know, Journey Brown was fantastic the last month of the season into the bowl game. You know, you saw, you know, Noah Cain even started a game, and obviously he didn't finish it and didn't last very long. I believe that was the Michigan State game. You know, there's a lot of really good backs there, and if you slip up, that's what happens. So, I mean, you can't really argue this one. I mean, we could go back and forth on Shorter and all that kind of stuff all day, but I mean, this one really just kind of makes sense. And the same, you know, I know we kind of, you know, I feel bad for DJ Brown because we kind of passed him off to the side, but it's the same thing. I mean, it's you hate to say it because these are decisions that will, you know, ultimately alter the course of a player's life, but it's also the sign of a healthy program. This isn't like last year where you're seeing this mass exodus of guys that, you know, trying to want to get out and get a fresh start. I mean, you've got a couple of these guys, and James Franklin mentioned it yesterday. He was asked how close they are to that 85 scholarship, and it's going to be a tight one. It's going to be tighter than you think. Now, ultimately, you know, do you ever land at 85? And, you know, are numbers ever, you know, do you ever find yourself in that situation where you're going to be over? No. I mean, things take care of themselves, and numbers take care of themselves. But yeah, it's going to be a lot harder to getting to 85 this year than it was, you know, any years in the past if you're following this program.
When Cain went down with that injury in his first start at Michigan State, and they were going into November, they were unbeaten, ranked 4th in the college football playoff rankings, you thought maybe that window is back open for Ricky Slade to seize the day. And of course, it ultimately ended up being Journey Brown, and they put a lot of eggs in his basket in a way they had not done with that backfield at any point in 2019. And Brown validated that in November, but November, just reviewing it with something I wrote yesterday, Sean, Slade didn't have a carry against Minnesota when they came out of that second bye week. He got stopped at the goal line on a screen pass on a 2-point conversion that was talked about at length after that game. He had one carry for 1 yard against Indiana the next week, and then with a Big Ten title game spot on the line at Ohio State, Slade wasn't with the team. He was not there because of a violation of team rules. And, you know, you start stringing those together, and it was not the way you'd want to see it go for Slade. He had 36 yards against Rutgers on six carries in the regular season finale. He went for a season high in yards, almost 60 yards in the Cotton Bowl when everybody ran wild. And I think we've talked about this a lot. We'll give the final word on the Slade situation and give you an indication of maybe where his career could still take him with these words from the running backs coach for Penn State.
He's such a great kid, man. I love him like my own son, man. I said, and I think his future's still bright. I mean, no matter what people think of outside this building, as long as he thinks he's okay. And that's what I tell him all the time, because he is. Ricky Slade is one of the most talented kids in the country. I still believe that, and I go to my grave thinking that way.
From the transfer portal to National Signing Day, Sean and I spoke about this on the last episode. This was a very interesting set of circumstances. We are so accustomed to the first Wednesday in February being a day where you get up early, go to bed late, and do a lot of reporting and writing in between. Wasn't the case this year. We've seen some guys get signed late. A couple years ago, Rasheed Walker was the only member of the late signing period that got on board for the 2018 class. A few more last year. None. In terms of scholarship additions, a couple walk-ons were announced. Sean, you had a write-up on all the walk-ons who are going to be joining Penn State. Pretty impressive group, guys who maybe had opportunities to pursue scholarships elsewhere. But in this case, there were no surprises coming our way in the morning. And by the time we got around to 12:30 and James Franklin walked into the press conference at Beaver Stadium, no one was really inclined to talk about signing day. It was about these new coaching hires. We got them later on. And that was really the topic of conversation, which, again, strange set of circumstances because of what we've experienced year after year after year on this first Wednesday in February.
Man, I was sitting at my laptop on Tuesday, and I'm planning out the week, and, you know, I play basketball a couple times a week, and I was, you know, thinking about Wednesday and what I would do. And then I was like, oh shit, Wednesday's signing day. And that's, you know, it's obviously not the normal, but, you know, Penn State, I think, signed four or five guys last year with Smith Filbert and Joseph Darkwa and a couple of other guys in that mix. And it was just like, wow, we're just going to pass this whole or gloss this whole thing over. And, you know, with 27 guys signing in December, it's not a surprise, but it's just, we think about how big signing day used to be on this first February Wednesday, and it's just it's crazy to think about. But, you know, here we are. I liked it. I'm sure you liked it too. It was great to do a walk-on preview, and, you know, that's where we're at. But we did get to meet a couple of the new assistant coaches. Kirk Shiraka was out there. Phil Troutwine, Taylor Stubblefield met with the media. But, of course, we got James Franklin as well. Franklin, you know, of course, I think he was asked, what, one or two recruiting questions, really?
Maybe.
Yeah, and that's he was talking about the new staff. You asked him about the receivers. He gave a very good answer. I mean, very, very candid answer. It's just like, hey, we got to get better at receiver. So not a ton that you can take away from this press conference, but, you know, he was pretty upfront about where he stands with a lot of issues.
Yeah, still searching for another coach at defensive line. We'll talk about that a little bit later here in the episode. That's the one spot they have to fill on defense in terms of a position coach. But it's been a progressive formulation of a new look staff on offense, where we said all of a sudden Tyler Bowen, tight ends coach, who has not been around that long, is the veteran member of that group. Kirk Shiraka, hired on December 26th, brought down to Dallas immediately for the Cotton Bowl, was on the sideline for that game. Phil Troutwine coming on board January 3rd after Matt Limegrover's contract was not renewed. And then Taylor Stubblefield a little bit later on, January 19th. So he's only on week three of his job with Penn State. So everybody in varying circumstances, but the interesting thing here, all of them came on board after the recruiting class was signed. And you know, so they're all playing catch up. It was a topic of conversation there. But additionally, Franklin was essentially asked, when you are formulating your plan for who you're going to bring on board, and we know he has long lists put together, and there's a lot of things he wants to check off on those lists. You know, how is it piecing together personalities and guys from different parts of the country? What goes into that conversation? He gave a general assessment of how they got to this point, what his game plan has been, and what he sees for the future off the bat here.
What happens is, you know, the time that we hired, you know, you're on the road, you know, with these guys, seeing how they interact. I have all my guys, once we hire them, I have all my guys, if we have the ability to still go visit you know, the homes and the schools of all of our new players. But then I also think it's really important that they call all the parents of our current players to introduce themselves, and that relationship is critical. So we're all working to pour our hearts and souls into these young men. So so far, so good. I've gotten great feedback from all the parents. I've gotten great feedback from our current players.
And early on, a lot of that talk was about the offense, and rightfully so. I mean, you kind of go into it with a different mindset. You think back to 2016 or 2015 when Joe Moorhead was hired, and you know that offense needed blown up. They needed something different, and he brought something different. Then you look 2 years later with Ricky Ronnie, and you want to ride that train as long as you possibly can. Now you're kind of in the middle of that zone where, yeah, you can bring in some new things, but hey, this, you know, we won 11 games this year. We want to keep continuity with the players that we have on our roster, that type of thing. So you bring in a guy like Kirk Shiroko, who runs something similar. They're not going to blow it up. They're not going to do all this crazy stuff where you're all of a sudden running a different offense. You know, terminology is going to be different. Things are going to look a little different when you get into to the spring game and get going. I mean, it's just it's a different situation, but it's really not. So I think that continuity is going to, you know, elevate the rest of this offense and keep things rolling the way that they're going to do. Like we mentioned before, they're going to run on the football a lot, and I think that's really what it's going to come back to. You bring in a guy like Phil Troutwine, who I talked to for a while yesterday, really impressed with the way that he carried himself and the way that he's, I guess, embraced being a technical guy even at 33 years old, which, you know, it usually comes with a little bit more experience than that. So I'm interested to see which direction this offense goes, but it really, it's just not going to see a ton of different looks from what we're going to see on the field this fall compared to last year.
You are just talking about this as Mark Brennan sends us both a text that he just posted a video of Troutwine breaking down some of that technical approach that he's going to bring. Troutwine was great yesterday. Got to give him credit for his first meeting. Everybody was really interesting to speak with because in Shiroka's case, he's been, you know, a topic of conversation for 6 weeks now. He's been around for a while, and we've had to wait to get him. You know, and the big question is going to be, what does he think of this personnel? He's coming from a situation at Minnesota where, you know, he didn't have the blue chip recruit stockpile that Penn State has put together, but look at the stat sheets from last year and compare them, and you got to like what he accomplished. I've gone over it before. Tanner Morgan made a major leap as a redshirt sophomore, put himself, you know, to be considered a top 10, 15 quarterback in a lot of metrics. You look at the wide receiver position, two guys went over 1,200 receiving yards. Both of them had 11 touchdowns, and they had a couple running backs go over 600 yards, one of whom went over 1,100 yards, and five different guys scored six or more touchdowns for Minnesota last year. So there's a lot to like about that, but he is now transitioning. He's getting a chance to match names to faces, and spring ball will tell a lot. But as Kirk Shiroka noted here in his first interaction with us, you know, he's been busy trying to evaluate what exactly he has on this roster and what he's going to go to work with when they hit the practice field in March.
I've had my iPad with me the whole time recruiting, so when I had any time, I had any downtime, I was watching their film, right, of their season last year, and trying to get a feel for, trying to get a head start on what do they do well, how can we build this, what are we going to merge into this thing with them, what are their weaknesses with it. So I've been working on that, but really, you know, you really get a real feel for that as you go through spring ball, you know, and you really start working with them and communicating with them and explaining to them what you're looking for. And now you really get a really good chance to evaluate their skill sets. And I think that one of the things that I do every year, it doesn't matter where I'm coaching at, how many years I've been there, when spring ball is over, you know, and I look at the cut-ups from spring practice, I'm not really looking at the schemes or necessarily the mistakes. I'm looking at the skill sets. What came natural to them? What did they really grasp? What don't they understand? What might not be in their wheelhouse, right? And what do we need to do moving forward?
Clearly, every player is under the microscope right now with Kirk Shiroka. He did not recruit any of them to Happy Valley. He is trying to assemble the best 11 he can, get them on the field, score a bunch of points, win a bunch of games. And that's his prerogative right now. And the guy who's in the front end of that spotlight has to be Sean Clifford. You mentioned last year the leap that Tanner Morgan made. He's the same age as Sean Clifford. He was in year three. Clifford now moving into year four. He's got a year as a starter under his belt. And there's no doubt about it, Sean. This is going to be the storyline centrally. The passing game at large, you tie in the wide receiver issue there. What's going to happen in that room? But it starts with Sean Clifford and what Kirk Shiroka can do with him in 2020.
When you listen to James Franklin, you kind of got to filter out the coach speak and all that kind of stuff and listen for the repeated themes. One thing that he said a couple of times on Wednesday, this is not a rebuild job. This is not something that Kirk Ciarrocca is going to walk into like he did at Western Michigan, like he did at Minnesota, where they've got to take time and build that back up. He wants that year three, that Tanner Morgan transformation with Sean Clifford to happen in year one. And I think that was a very telling statement. I think that when he was asked about his quarterbacks, when he was asked about some of that stuff, he basically said, actually, when you asked him about the receivers, the first thing he said was, we got to be more consistent throwing the ball.
This so the whole I think, field, he said. We got to be able to distribute across the whole field, and that's something we consistently, you were first off on that earlier in the season, but it was a theme throughout the season where it didn't seem like Clifford had that whole peripheral feel for the passing game.
And some of that's the offense, some of that is just breaking in a new quarterback, but it really never developed from there, and really we saw that all season long, and it really hindered the offense. So now all of a sudden you're turning around, you're expecting a lot more out of Sean Clifford, and you're expecting Kirk Ciarrocca to be the guy that gets him there.
And he was asked as well, Ciarrocca, you know, what do you like in a quarterback? You know, he doesn't really come from necessarily a long track record of dual threat quarterbacks, although he was quick to point out one he had, Andy Hall, back at Delaware. It was a 6th-round draft pick in the NFL. But, you know, Tanner Morgan wasn't a guy who scared you with his legs. Certainly Joe Flacco is a name that's brought up. He's not fitting that mold. But he says whenever he gets to a new campus and the recruiting guys want to know what he wants, he just says, I want a good quarterback. We're going to play to the strengths of the quarterback. We're going to tailor our system that way. And very much he reiterated it. Franklin reiterated it. It's not a blow-up job. It's not a rebuild. Like you said, they have a plan in place that there's going to be a lot of things that look familiar from 2019. How can they enhance that? What can they bring in that worked in Minnesota? Again, it starts with Sean Clifford. He was asked for an initial assessment of Clifford, and there's a long way to go in that relationship. There's a lot of scrutinizing, I'm sure, that Ciarrocca is going to do when it comes to Clifford and his fit in this offensive scheme and what he wants him to take steps forward in 2020. But here was the initial first public thoughts on his new quarterback.
I love Sean. You know, I think when I got down to the Cotton Bowl, I'm pretty sure he was the first guy that I had a conversation with. As soon as I got out of the car, they were coming out, and he saw me and came over and introduced myself, and we began to talk and felt a real connection right away with him. Very intelligent, very hard worker, absolutely wants to be great, right? He wants to be great, and he's willing to pay the price in order to accomplish that, right? So I'm really excited to work with him and help him realize his potential.
And before we move on to the new other new members of the staff, one thing that jumped out to me about what Franklin said, and this is kind of runs counter to what I thought we would see from the Ciarrocca offense, is that James Franklin still expects to run the ball with the quarterback. Now, maybe not as much as they did last year. Obviously, Sean Clifford was blown up a few times, and by the end of the season was you know a little bit worse for wear. But still, that's going to be an aspect that they're going to keep in. That's, I think that's one of those core principles that James Franklin likes to have in there, and I can see they've had some success with it in the past, especially with Trace McSorley, but that's not going to completely go away. So I thought that was important to bring up. We're going to talk about Kirk Ciarrocca and Sean Clifford with the passing game, but also with the running game, he's going to stay a part of it.
In the last 2 years, by the time you got into early November, your quarterback was you know, certainly not where he needed to be to run this offense full throttle. Trace McSorley in 18, Sean Clifford last year. So that will be an approach to watch moving ahead here. The passing game, again, it's going to be something that has to get better. And the receiver group was something that Franklin when asked, you know, I threw that question out there. It's something we've talked about a lot on the podcast. You know, you look beyond KJ Hamler, who's now getting ready for the NFL. No one in either of the last 2 years averaged more than 2 catches per game. That goes for people who were on the roster in 18 and 19 and who aren't on the roster now. Just no receiver not named KJ Hamler averaged more than 2 catches per game. And that's a problem that can't be sustained here in 2020. I don't care how good Pat Freiermuth is. I don't care how good your running back group is. If this team wants to take that next step, be a true college football championship playoff contender, they got to find some solutions there. And you know, Taylor Stubblefield, welcome to campus. This is your unit. The word that popped up over and over and over again with Franklin, with Stubblefield, stability. He has been a nomad of sorts. He is not alone in that. It's a common theme in college college football coaching, guys relocating with frequency. But James Franklin, I think, has had enough of the revolving door at his receiver room at a leadership position. I think he made that very clear yesterday, and I'd have to imagine he did that during the conversations that led to Stubblefield being hired. And to Stubblefield, he says he needs this. He needs stability. He needs to be somewhere where he can sink his teeth in the situation for 3-4 years. These are his words. And Stubblefield also said, we'll see if it holds true. He said, if I get a call next year and someone wants to hire me as their offensive coordinator, I'm going to say no because I'm not ready, and I need to understand that I need to follow Sciarocca's lead and follow Franklin's lead. And, you know, he went over how he got to know Franklin 12 years ago when he was in his first year as an assistant with Eastern Michigan and they played Maryland. He was told that Franklin was a guy that he needed to introduce himself to. That happened. They maintained some sort of, text back and forth, minor communication over about a dozen-year span. He represented Air Force a few years back and came to a developmental opportunity at Penn State for just 2 or 3 days and got a chance to see Franklin and that staff in action and really get the sense that he is fulfilling a big goal getting on Franklin's staff, a guy he has really admired. But both these guys, there's nothing set in stone. He said there's no contractual obligation to stay for a long time, but they both very much made it a point to tell us, members of the media, that they're in for the long haul with this relationship.
Two things. Number one, I know James appreciates the stat that you gave him before your question about those two catches. He looked really thrilled to be hearing that, probably for the first time. Number two, if someone tries to hire Taylor Stubblefield next year as an offensive coordinator, that's probably going to be a different conversation than we're having right now. So I appreciate the sentiment on Stubblefield's part, but somebody wants you to be a coordinator. That's obviously a big step up, and it'd be something. But yes, that stability, I think, is necessary for the guys in that room, really. I mean, and there's been a lot of turnover there, whether it be transfers or leaving early for the draft or, just things not working out. That's all part of it. I mean, you just kind of took for granted what you had with Josh Gattis and how long he was here or how long he was with the Franklin staff. Then all of a sudden you get the turnover. Corley doesn't work out. Parker, you think maybe he's got something, then all of a sudden he's off. You need some stability in there, and that's something that James Franklin talked to Stubblefield about during the hiring process. I'm sure that's something, that he believes, and we'll see whether or not that comes to fruition. But yeah, I think it benefited them, or it could benefit them both, just to settle down. Now, as for who's going to be catching the ball, I mean, you got a chance to talk to Stubblefield more than I do, but yeah, you just from listening to James Franklin, you're really not sure. They think they have a couple of young guys that can maybe take that next step. You do get Cam Sullivan Brown back from injury. He looked to be a little bit more he's not going to be a world beater or anything like that, but a little bit more consistent than you got from that other spot. You take that next step with Daniel George, and of course you've got Jahan Dotson there. But really, 6 months from now, this depth chart, this three deep, whatever we throw together here, could look very different from what we forecast right now.
Yeah, Sean, by the way, I learned a long time ago that it helps sometimes to provide that context to the root of your question so a coach doesn't go surface level on you with the answer. And I don't think Franklin was going to. Clearly, he was ready to open up on the receiver spot. But he's not. It's not a Franklin thing. It is me asking questions and not trying to. We get very limited questions with Franklin and everybody, and this goes back well before I got to Penn State. So always going to throw out some pesky stats at coaches, and they may not always be of the positive kind. And certainly, it's hard to find a lot of positive in this positional room, especially when we talk about KJ Hamler leaving early, Justin Shorter moving on to the SEC. And Stubblefield went out to dinner with this group as a whole on Tuesday, he told us, and they got together. He's still trying to figure out these personalities. He understands there's a void in leadership right now, not just from a coaching circumstance, because look, let's face it, depending on how long these guys have been on campus, they may have been recruited by Josh Gattis, David Corley comes in, Jared Parker comes in, everybody's got a different message, and everybody's trying to tell them how they're going to get things on track, and here they are with yet another voice coming their way, and I think it's going to be important to see who rises up as a peer leader. Now, Jahan Dotson would be the obvious person you would land on based on productivity, experience, but you've known Jahan for a while. I've known him, I think, since his high school sophomore year. He's a soft-spoken guy. He's a lead by example kind of guy. KJ Hamler, I think, was willing to get in guys' faces. I don't know how to read the situation. I don't think Taylor Stubblefield does yet, but I think it's important that he has a couple right-hand man in that room that can help him, kind of hammer home that message when he's not watching, when guys are away from the facilities and making sure that these receivers are doing what they need to do to set up a leap in 2020. One of the priorities for him early on, he said, Because just like Troutwine, just like Shiraka, the heavy lifting was done for the 2020 recruiting class before they got the job. They inherited a class at their position. They were not part of that process of bringing guys to campus. And at wide receiver, it is a big group to inherit. Five players, two of them on campus right now. He had some basic relationship with Keiondre Lambert because they were in communication when he was at Miami. But beyond that, you know, I think he was doing a lot of catch up that first week on the job. Of course, we saw him down with Parker Washington, and that's how Beltgate ensued. But you know, he was around the country, getting in faces, learning more about mom and dad, you know, what makes these kids tick, and trying to break some ice. So when they get in the spring camp and when some parents get back, things are a little bit more smoother. Everybody can be more at ease and just focus on the task at hand. You know, I will say, though, he seems just about as uncertain with his personnel as we do, and that's to be understood. He's been on the job for 2 weeks and 3 or 4 days. But it is a murky situation at best. Daniel George comes to mind as someone who needs to step up. Matt Kippenhammer, based on the reporting we've seen, is going to be playing baseball again this spring. Don't know what that does. And Cam Sullivan Brown, another name. You know, these guys are not the young kids anymore. They are all of a sudden the veterans of this group. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Of course, a junior college player coming in with Norvell Black, but a lot to go through on our end. And I think, you know, Taylor Stubblefield is just the very basic beginnings of trying to figure out what he's got.
And there's no answers to that yet. I mean, that's the thing is, and I had this a bunch in my chat last week on the board at Lions 24/7, is asking a bunch of questions that just frankly don't have answers yet. And there's really not much you can do except speculate at this point. Now, on the flip side of that, you've got Phil Troutwine, who walks into a room full of experience. You've got four starters back, and I guess five guys that you could call starters because Mike Miranda and CJ Thorpe both split starts this year. So it's kind of a flip situation. And, you know, we talked to Troutwine at length the other day, and it's about correcting some things that he saw on film. And it's just a very different approach. I mean, you're not sure what that receiver room is going to look like come August, come September, but you have a pretty good idea of what you're lining up with as an offensive line. And that's got to be an enviable situation. You know, when you compare Stubblefield to what Troutwine's walking into, I mean, obviously there's a big difference there.
Yeah, and he was an impressive guy. You wrote something up on Thursday morning about him essentially being snubbed by Penn State. It was a school that he had his sights set on coming out of South Jersey. Apparently, as you noted, didn't really know where Rutgers was or what a Rutgers was. And
slipped that one in there.
Yeah. Thank you. Appreciate that. Got a little fun feedback on the board from that one. But, you know, I think this is a guy who, you know, he really loves the situation that has been presented to him at 33 years old. You know, he's all in on it. And you know, I did bring up something that we talked about when he was hired. You know, going back to his Florida Gators day, that locker room had as much personality as you'll find in a locker room, especially based on everything that has come out since with the personalities. And he said he could write a book on his experiences there. And being a team captain with the Florida Gators, winning those national titles has really equipped him to be a leader of young men as he is now. And, you know, he's still close enough to his career and in his NFL experience where he still resonates with the players in some peer aspect. But, you know, very clear that he wants to clean things up. You know, not saying anything bad about Lime Grover, but, you know, I think he's going to be on a mission to really, from the technique standpoint. And I'm curious. I did not hear this question asked. It's not a question I got to ask myself, and the media period ended while I was with Phil. I'm curious if he has any ambitions to shuffle the deck, or if, you know, the guys we saw playing where they were in 2019 are going to be in the same spots in 2020. I'm not sure if that's came up for you, Sean, but it's something I was curious about, whether it's a Will Fries or those guys at right guard, CJ Thorpe and Mike Miranda, even Mike Mennett at center. And I will say one thing, he could not say enough about Rasheed Walker's potential, and that is very little surprise if you paid attention in 2019.
He talked very little about personnel in terms of what he plans to do. I think he's got some ideas in mind. I think it helps to have a guy like Mennett in the middle of that line. And you're right. I mean, he could play guard, but I still think the most value that you can get out of him as a veteran is to make those calls and to be that guy. And you're going to plug somebody in there at left guard, or, you know, figure out if you've got a guy at right guard that, you know, you think you're going to stick with. I mean, he's got options here, and I think that's really what it comes down to. And I hate to compare receivers to the offensive line, but this is a group that's far ahead of, and they expect it to be far ahead of where they're going and where this offense is going. running the football, I mean, that's a good spot to be in. But yeah, you're right. I think he kind of tipped his hand a little bit about what he sees in Rashid Walker, and I think for good reason. I think Rashid Walker is a tremendous prospect at the next level, and you know, I'm not sure how much longer they're going to have him, especially had that redshirt season. But if he takes the next step, I mean, he's got all the potential in the world. But yeah, you've got that veteran presence coming back. Like I said, five guys that have started. You see what you've got with Thorpe. You see what you've got with Miranda, and I think that's probably going to be the tipping point for Troutwine this spring, is to see what they have with those guys, because they still really like Caden Wallace. They still have a couple of guys on that roster that they think can be good depth guys, can be good guys that can push for that starting job, but maybe not frontline starters right now.
And where is Juice Scruggs on his recovery, right? I mean, a guy that, you know, this time last year, you talked to the Penn State staff, that there were really some genuine excitement about what he could bring to the table during the 2019 season as a redshirt freshman. You know, he suffers a back injury in an accident, shelved for the entire season. So that's also something we'll be keeping tabs on going into the spring. And again, speaks to the potential depth that Troutwine may be working with. Sean, the new coaches are in place. We had a chance to speak with them. We're still waiting on one more vacancy to be filled. You and I will touch on that, the defensive line spot, just around the corner. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Earlier this week, Sean Spencer confirming he's on his way to the NFL, a really heartfelt message from Coach Chaos to those who impacted his stay in Happy Valley, particularly to James Franklin, who he was with for 9 seasons going back to Vanderbilt. But life moves on at Penn State, and they are going to be looking to fill that spot in the next few days, I would imagine, before we get a chance to post our next podcast. Heck, at this rate, with these hires and how they've been timed, maybe before this podcast gets posted. But Sean, you've been constructing the candidate board. You've been updating it, dropping guys, adding guys. Any sense of where things are headed?
A little bit. Yeah, we've gotten a little bit clearer on that board. I got a couple of guys, a couple of college coaches that seem to be well into the mix. But I think that the thing that kind of throws that everything off is there's been some NFL interest in the job as well. And that's been something that, we've talked about this before. It's tough to go from the NFL back to college. Recruiting is a grind. The lifestyle is much different. It's going to be tough to, I guess, convince people. But on the flip side, I think there's been more interest than James Franklin expected from the NFL side. So, you're going to get back and you're going to hear a guy that we have on our list, Jerry Montgomery of the Green Bay Packers. I mean, how realistic is it to land the coach from the Green Bay Packers or the NFL? It's going to take a full-time NFL defensive line coach job and then all of a sudden jump back into recruiting, jump back into that. That's just tough for me to process. I mean, because you know how much these guys are on the road, how much lifestyle change that is, how much less golf that you play when you're a college coach. So that's going to be one thing to look at. But, it's certainly a possibility. Elijah Robinson, I don't want to say it fell through because it really was never in place, but that was the guy that they turned to first. Of course, he played at Penn State. He was spent 4 years at Penn State in an off-the-field role. Really one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. He's going to stick with Texas A&M. And, he's turned down Texas. He's turned down Rutgers. I'm sorry. I got to slide that in there. He's turned down NFL jobs. So he seems pretty comfortable at Texas A&M. He's doing a really good job down there, and it's just one of the best defensive line coaches in the country. And that's what happens sometimes. You just, you've got your guy and you want to go after him, and sometimes it doesn't work. So Robinson made it off the board. There's a couple of other college guys that they're in talking to. You just look back at the contacts that some of these guys have with James Franklin or with other members of the staff. And it's funny because you go back and they go back a long way, some of these guys. And it's just, it's, it's a mess, but it isn't. And I think that once they get going, and James Franklin alluded to this on Wednesday, once they get going and find the guy that they want, they can turn it around pretty quickly, but it's a grind to get there. Now, I feel pretty confident by the time we publish this, and I've got to edit this podcast, so obviously it might take a little bit longer than you think it will, but I don't think it's going to come in the next 24 hours or so. But once they get done, once they can turn it around, I think it'll come pretty quick. So do expect something over the next couple of days.
Yeah, and by the way, Texas A&M, nice signing day for them with wrapping it up with a 4-star defensive tackle addition and Elijah Robinson putting in that work. And certainly it was something that he probably had to address, not probably, definitely had to address on the recruiting trail with his future. And to your point, yeah, it is a big leap to go from being a guy who's working with NFL players. And on any given week, you can say, I don't want this guy anymore, and talk to the GM and talk to your head coach, and you could cut the last man in your position group, find another guy on the waiver wire, turn around that roster. If you like a player a lot, you can sign him to a 6-year contract extension, and now you're asking him to come to a campus and saying, here are your rental car keys. We need you down in Virginia for a 7:30 a.m. meeting tomorrow with a 16-year-old who can't sign with us for 18 more months, and you got to pitch him now. That is a big undertaking.
No doubt. And it's one thing when you look at the guys, there's a lot of guys that have jumped from college to the NFL that maybe, you know, and Sean Spencer's a bad example because he was a full-time D-line coach, and now he's going to be the D-line coach of the Giants. But, you know, you see college coaches hopping for, you know, I don't want to call them lateral steps because you're going from college to pro, but I mean, that's the lifestyle is something to take into account. And of course, you know, NFL population bases, you go to different cities, there's maybe more to do here than there is to do in, you know, the Iowa City or something like that. So it's there's a lot that goes into this decision. It's tough for me to see an NFL guy coming back into play, but, you know, stranger things have happened. And, you know, some of those guys that they're interviewing with NFL experience, you look at some guys that were recently let go, all of a sudden they're looking for a job. And, hey, college might look pretty good to them after being on the unemployment market for a few weeks.
Yeah, and the silver lining here, maybe for James Franklin and the Penn State program, is February. Not a lot happened on the recruiting trail the way things are conducted now with the recruiting calendar. February is very much a sleepy time for these assistant coaches in terms of what they can and can't do with recruits, and maybe that buys you a little time to figure things out. One thing that did happen last week was a junior day, and they capped off January with yet another key weekend. It was a theme throughout the month. We've had you covered here with a lot of that discussion. Brian Doan, our national analyst, was on a little while back and kind of breaking down some things Penn State was doing. We had a ton of content up on the site over the last weekend, and a particularly key player, one that this next decision on the staff is going to factor into, is Aaron Armitage out of New Jersey, Blair Academy, the same program that produced Jason Owe a couple cycles ago. He's in New Jersey now, but he is a Canadian transplant who has put himself on the map in a big way, got a bunch of offers. He's a top 10 strong side defensive end in 24/7 sports evaluation, and this is one that, you know, very clearly a lot of defensive line players, including Armitage, are going to be watching very closely to see what James Franklin does.
Yeah, you develop those relationships over a number of years, and Sean Spencer was, you know, at Blair Academy a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden he's gone, and that's tough to overcome that, but it's not something that's completely going to, you know, knock Penn State out of the mix. It's just one of those things that you got to find the right guy to fit your program, and hopefully he clicks with one of these guys. I mean, you've got, I think it's a very important cycle for defensive end. Defensive tackle, maybe not so much, but still there's a number of guys there. You look at Tyleek Williams in Virginia, Taiwan Malone in Jersey. You know, all of a sudden, you know, you're in a spot where you've got to, I guess, fill out the gaps in your roster, and defensive end is one of those ones where you sign, you know, Smith Vilbert last year, and Adisa Isaac did not use a red shirt, and, you know, you're bringing in Bryce Mostella this year, and, you know, it's just kind of, you need to hit on some of these top level guys. So we'll see what happens from a defensive end standpoint, but yeah, I think the next defensive line coach is going to be very important to Aaron Armitage. I don't think it's a typical recruitment in that you look at his offer list and he's got Michigan and Penn State and Notre Dame and Ohio State. I think some academic schools can be in play here. He wants to go out and see Stanford and some other schools in the spring. Virginia is in play here heavily as well because of their academic situation. So I think it's not going to be a typical recruitment, but you've got to get a defensive coach in that can click with a guy like Armitage, because I think that is a guy that's a very realistically could end up as one of maybe the centerpieces of your class.
quarterback often the centerpiece of a recruiting class, and we've talked about a lot. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate working on those. The 2021 recruiting class at quarterback, got to start that conversation with Caleb Williams, as we have several times here on the podcast. Garrett Nussmeier is a player I caught up with out of the state of Texas. His father is the quarterback's coach for the Dallas Cowboys. A story up on that toward the end of last week. I forget if we hit on that with the podcast, but long story short, Nussmeier may be going to commit around Easter. It's not as certain as it was. Don't think he'll be back to Penn State before he announces a decision, and he plans on only using an official visit to the school of his choice. Now, Nussmeier was on campus last summer, was on campus in the fall, but Christian Veyu was on campus last weekend, which means he had a chance to sit down with Kirk Shiraka, the new positional coach. Ricky Ronnie was the guy spearheading this recruitment before. Now it's Shiraka, and they had an interesting viewing session in Happy Valley, Sean.
Got to watch a little Penn State, and got to watch a little Penn State lose to Minnesota. That was a very interesting approach. I get it. Obviously, he wants to show Kirk Shiraka wants to show how they attack as an offense rather than just, you know, here's what Penn State did and here's what Penn State didn't do. So you put the tape on to the Gophers, and all of a sudden you like what you see. And, you know, I think he really liked what he saw. It was his first chance to meet him on campus. Now, you know, Penn State's been out and about and have stopped by the school a couple of times, but you get him on campus, you spend some extended time there, you go to the hockey game, which, you know, Christian admitted he's not the hockey player in his family. His little brother is. So maybe didn't tip the scales as much for the Canadian prospect as you would think, but here we are. So but you get him back on campus. I don't think he's in a rush to do anything. I think Penn State's in a pretty good spot right now, but as you mentioned, a lot of those dominoes rely on Caleb Williams, and that's not just at Penn State. That's at, you know, at LSU, at Oklahoma, at a couple of different, you know, Clemson's even in the mix as well. A couple other schools still in the mix for Caleb Williams. So, you know, quite frankly, I think Penn State wants Veyu. I think he's probably the most realistic right now. But at the same time, I don't see them, you know, I don't see them having a problem waiting around for him. And he doesn't seem to want to make a decision anytime soon anyway.
It will be interesting to see when a decision is made by either Penn State or a player and when that comes, because Caleb Williams has everything under his control. No one's going to pressure him into announcing anything. And as I said, it seems like Nussmeier plans to be coming off the board this spring. And based on everything I've gathered from our conversation, he is not a kid who's going to take another look elsewhere once he makes a decision. And by the way, his recruitment has blown up this winter as well. A bunch of new Power 5 offers for Nussmeier. So a lot to kind of delve through at quarterback. Veyu continues to be a name that surfaces. We go from a couple of Canadian players to Virginia, where Penn State has really cultivated quite a pipeline, and certainly the last few years they have signed their fair share of prospects. A five-star guy like Brandon Smith, top running backs Ricky Slade, Devin Ford. You've gotten mixed results from some of these guys, but the name to know there in 2021 is Tony Grimes, and he was on campus yet again. Brian Doan reported before this visit that he will be returning for an official visit when Penn State hosts Ohio State next season, and presumably what will be the whiteout game, and that'll be a big recruiting to do. But Tony Grimes, the number one cornerback in the country, got to campus, got a chance to spend more time with this staff, and I think he is feeling the love. The big difference here, as Brian Doan noted in his reporting, was mom came this time, and that was big.
Yeah, that's always big to get mom on campus, and it's one of those things where they're just going to have to keep bringing him back. He's in no hurry. We mentioned the December 1st decision date is something that he has pretty well set in stone, but this is a big recruitment. I have him made up my defensive big board, and it's finally going to come out at some point. Started working on some other stuff.
Good job not giving an exact date. That was very
exactly.
I thought you were going to give a date. Yeah,
I was close, man. But I have Tony Grimes as number one on that defensive side of the ball. I think there's, you know, you can make an argument for a couple of different guys at the top of that list, but Tony Grimes is an elite cornerback, and really, you're up a weight class if you're Penn State. I mean, you're competing with some really, really good schools here. You've got a guy that's maybe just on the edge of your typical recruiting area, but you've gotten them up to campus a couple of times. They seem to like what you're doing right now with the Grimes camp. So it's a very important recruitment for Penn State. Could be a very big statement for Penn State if they were to land him. Like I said, that nothing's happening anytime soon, but you position yourself well early. You keep getting him back to campus, and really anything can happen. This is one that, you know, at the outset of his recruitment, maybe looked like he was going to look at some schools in Texas or Florida, or, you know, Ohio State's been bouncing around. Clemson's always brought up with prospects in that region, but Penn State's staying right there. And really, when you're recruiting at this level, and when you're recruiting at the level that you're trying to get, which is a college football playoff type level, you eventually want to win some of these.
From a five-star defensive prospect to a couple guys who, as of now, are in that three-star category, but could be very important for Penn State as this 2021 recruiting cycle progresses. Again, part of this junior day, and both in their own way attached to Sean Spencer as well. Jeff Davis, a cornerback out of Connecticut. Spencer was huge up in Connecticut, up in New England, getting guys like Marquise Wilson, Tyler Rudolph, Will Levis at quarterback even. And then on the defensive line, Dorian Ford, a defensive tackle out of Pittsburgh. Both of those, again, not the clout on the recruiting trail as some of the guys we've gone over just now, but very much on the target board.
Important guys, yeah. And we mentioned defensive tackle. There's some other guys on the board as well. But Dorian Ford, anytime that you can get a guy that's, you know, he's 6'3", close to 300 pounds, and he moves pretty well, there's not a lot of those guys out there. So you want to take them. And, of course, he's in-state. I see this as an in-state battle with Pittsburgh. And, you know, Penn State's gotten him up to campus, I think, 6 or 7 times in the last year. So that's certainly a good showing there. Jeff Davis just kind of has the feel of a guy that's going to end up in the class, and sort of like we felt with Tyler Rudolph a couple of years ago. He just keeps popping back up. He's got the profile that they look for, the length. He can run well, a pretty good football player. So I like where Penn State stands coming out of this. I don't know, you know, he's obviously not at the top of that cornerback board where you've got guys like Grimes that we just talked about, Jordan Hancock down in Georgia, a couple of other cornerbacks that are out there on the board. But he's got versatility. He's got a lot. There's a lot to like about Jeff Davis. We have him listed as a mid 3-star prospect on 24/7 Sports, and I think the composite's slightly higher than that. This is a kid that I see rising up. I've talked to Doan about him. Doan's a pretty big fan of him, and after the junior tape that he put together, you know, I could see him trending upward. So while it might not be, these guys might not be the, you know, the sexy pick right now in terms of guys that you want to forecast in your class in February, I think they'd still be quality adds, and they were back on campus. And really, you mentioned it before, they got to find a guy that comes in. I mean, Spencer was locked into the defensive line, of course, and you see that with Dorian Ford and Connecticut, the New England area. You see that with Jeff Davis. Going to be important places for Penn State to address, and whether that's the new defensive line coach, whether that's moving some guys around. James Franklin said they thought they had a good idea of where they were going in terms of splitting up territories. Now, all of a sudden, you kind of got to wait for the new guy to come in and see where you go from that standpoint.
They maximized this Saturday. A nice list put together here. Linebacker Jamari Budden out of Michigan, a guy who's gotten a lot of interest across the Big Ten and beyond. He's a name that stood out. But I think from a positional group standpoint, we talked about Kirk Shiraka, you know, getting a quarterback prospect front and center, having that quality time in person. You know, who had a big opportunity was Phil Troutwine this past weekend. Offered offensive linemen like Garrett Dellinger, Rocco Spindler, Eli Sutton, Caleb Tiernan, one who does not have an offer, but as we mentioned last week, I spoke with him, Tristan Bounds, a 6'8", 255, 260-pound lineman who certainly is on the radar, to say the least, and he's got a bunch of Power 5 options. Quite the crew. We'll see who ends up, you know, materializing into a long-term Penn State target, maybe jumps on board in this class, but you know, Phil Troutwine had his opportunity to impress.
I mean, this guy has been getting kids on campus over and over again. You know, he still has a couple of guys to get back, big fish to get back on, like Nolan Rucci, who's probably going to visit at, or who will visit after. I don't want to say probably. That'll get some people in a tizzy, but plans to visit after the dead period. Tristan Lee, you know, Clemson and LSU have come on very strong as of late, and he likes them a lot. So get him back on campus. Of course, Wyatt Millam was unable to make the trip a couple of weeks ago because of the snowstorm. Want to get him back on campus as well. But yeah, I mean, he's got Rocco Spindler coming out, Garrett Dellinger, his teammate, coming out, Caleb Tiernan. I mean, there's a lot of names that have popped up on this offensive line board that, you know, you maybe kind of overlooked early in the process, and then you get a fresh start, you get a shot in the arm here with Phil Troutwine, and they seem to like what he's doing. Eli Sutton is a guy we really haven't even mentioned either. He just put Penn State, I believe, in his top 6 or 7 on signing day. So, I mean, there's no shortage of names, and Phil Troutwine's a big reason for it.
And one name you didn't mention there, but we've talked about it at length on the podcast, Landon Tengwall has already been to campus since Troutwine got this job. So yeah, he's laying a lot of that foundation right now. Impressive work out of him. Now, it was the junior day. The high school juniors we just talked about were in focus, but beyond that, big name popped up later in the week, Wilfredo Ibar. I believe he is the number 2 defensive lineman as of now in the early stages of 24/7 Sports 2022 prospect rankings. What do you make of this visit? What do you make of Ibar, Sean?
Ibar is a very good prospect. I don't know that he's going to be in that that five-star range or number four prospect over in all in the country. I don't know. There are going to be guys that come up and pass him, but still there's a lot to like. Again, going back to what we said about Armitage and what we said about Ford and Jeff Davis is, you know, his point of contact was going to be Sean Spencer, his Connecticut guy. So, you know, anytime that there's a Connecticut guy, especially defensive lineman, you have to include Sean Spencer in that mix. Now, all of a sudden, he's out of it. He got a pretty good idea of what they're trying to do from a philosophical standpoint and things like that. But really, it's going to be one of those situations where a defensive lines coach is going to have to come in. He's going to come in sort of cold because he can't go right on the road. Troutwine, Stubblefield, to a lesser extent, Shiraka, were able to get out and put a face with the name right away and get on the road. New defensive line coach won't be able to do that. So you're going to be playing catch up a little bit over the next month or two for whoever that new guy is. But yeah, I mean, to get Ibar back on campus, he came in for a game late in the year. Keep getting him back to campus. He's not going to decide anytime soon, but when he, you know, when it comes down to making that top five list or setting those officials or making that that eventual decision, I think Penn State's going to be right there because of the early impression that they've made on him as an entire staff.
He's another player out of New England, hometown in Massachusetts, I believe, but he goes to the Cheshire Academy in Connecticut when we've seen that program produce a lot of Power Five prospects during recent years. So another name to know. And then we'll go real long distance. Someone who we discussed previewing the event last week, Matthias Mega Barnwell, 6'5", 240-ish pounds right now as a freshman in high school of Spotsylvania in Virginia. He's a guy who continues to talk about playing tight end. I think Penn State is very much happy to talk about him playing tight end at this stage, but I think he's 14, 15 years old. You already heard the measurements. You heard us last week. Sure looks like offensive tackle could lie in his future, but comes away with a strong impression of Penn State. For a young kid, he's already got the whiteout game experience. I would imagine they'll do their best to make that an annual occurrence for Barnwell, who will continue to see his recruitment blow up. And I'd imagine once the camp circuit hits this spring, he will be an ascending name to know in that 2023 class at a national level.
You purists may want to turn it off right now. Just tell him what he wants to hear right now. I mean, he's a freshman in high school. If you think he wants to hear tight end, great. Come in and be the best tight end you can get. You can be. Nature is going to take its course, as we've seen so many times in the last couple of years. It's been more than the last couple of years, but we'll see where it goes with that.
Turning our attention very quickly, a couple of things that popped up on signing day. As we said, it was not an eventful signing day in terms of recruiting for Penn State, but looking ahead at 2021, two names to know down in South Florida. Both of these guys released a top six list on Wednesday. And, you know, in today's terms, top six is kind of narrowing it down because we see a lot of top 10s, 12s, 15s out there. The first, Terrence Lewis. He's considered the number two outside linebacker in composite rankings. He's at Chaminade Madonna High School, following a recent transfer. That's where Penn State signed wide receiver John Dunmore in the 2019 class. The other name to know there, he's a little bit lesser of a recruit when you look at the composite rankings. I believe he's in the three-star realm, but love his junior tape. He split time between a couple schools as a junior, ended up at Miami Central High School, won a state championship there. Yulkeith Brown. I hope I'm saying that first name correctly. It's the first time I've heard myself say it. I've written it a few times, but he's down there again at Miami Central, a powerhouse program in its own right. Plays cornerback, plays receiver. He's been putting on a show in the 7-on-7 circuit. And before he made this announcement, Steve Wiltfong had spoken to him at the All-American Combine for the underclassmen out in San Antonio in January. He pointed to Penn State along with the Florida Gators as this two schools pushing for him most. You're not going to be surprised. Jaywon Sider, a key part of this process. But the other name he mentioned during that discussion with Wiltfong was Jared Parker playing a role in his recruitment. So we'll see if Taylor Stubblefield is emerging in that process. But he's a guy, again, you turn on the highlights, he looks like he exceeds where he is. And I think he's like 340, 350 in the composite rankings. But again, South Florida, you like the traction that Penn State has built up. Sometimes it's hard to remember. Jaywon Sider's been on campus now for just 2 years. Last three cycles, they've signed seven guys out of Florida. They've got a couple four-star running backs coming up with the 2020 class, one already here. And again, just two names to tuck away here. Maybe they'll take official visits in the spring. And we've seen in the recent cycles, sometimes that's all it takes, a positive experience for a weekend on campus, follow-up visits down in home turf from the recruiting staff, specifically Jaywon Sider with the family. And next thing you know, the kid signed, sealed, and delivered. Not saying that will be the case here, but it's not as far-fetched as maybe we thought it may have been, you know, say winter of 2018 going into 19 even.
These kids trust Jaywon Sider so much. You saw it with John Dunmore, just one visit. Kevon Lee, just one visit. Last year, Keziah Holmes as well. So, I mean, they just trust him so much. The relationships down there are phenomenal. You mentioned Terrence Lewis at Chaminade Madonna. They've also got a couple of other guys. Of course, that's John Dunmore's old high school. Braylon Brown, Thad Franklin, who put out a top 12 yesterday as well that had Penn State on it. So these are guys that you're going to circle when you're talking about potential official visits. Now, it's one thing to get them up, and then, you know, you turn it around and you show them the vision. You show them what Sider has in mind. And so far, you know, I'll be honest, they've had more success in Florida than I thought they would. That's not me doubting Jaywon Sider. That's me as a person that's traveled to Florida several times from state college. It's not easy to do. It's not fun to do sometimes. Sometimes you end up in a van coming up from Dulles Airport, but it's just part of that travel. And it's not always fun, but you turn it around and you make the most of it. And so far they've done that. And I think they're going to continue to get some of these guys on campus. The Penn State brand, very strong, very appealing down there. And really, I mean, he said it a couple of weeks ago, he got the blessing from Uncle Luke. And really, that's all you can ask for at this point.
How's this for a segue? I will be in Florida in about 48 hours and I'll be staying there throughout the week next week. So we'll not be joining you on the upcoming episode of the podcast. However, still get to hear me because we've got another early enrollee interview. You can check that next week. But Sean, you'll be manning the fort alone for the next podcast. And I know you'll do just well in that role.
Yeah, I have no idea what I'm going to do, but we'll figure something out and we'll get something out for you guys next week.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of Sean Fitz, I'm Tyler Donahue. You got a chance to hear from a bunch of those assistant coaches. We have a lot of content up on the site, videos, written pieces, some more on Ricky Slade's entrance to the transfer portal, and a lot on recruiting as always. For now, though, that's going to do it for this episode. We'll catch you soon on the Lions 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.